You are about to participate in the most ambitious culinary experiment ever imagined.
This competition is going to test everything.
Adapt quickly to anything. I mean anything. The wildest day of your life starts right now.
All new 24 and 24 Last Chef Standing. Sunday night at 8 on Food Network. Stream on Max.
This is chapter 163 of the WCBS Author Talks podcast. Follow us on Twitter and Instagram at WCBS880Books. I'm Lisa Cherkovich. Coming up, a murderer underestimates a pack of senior sleuths in the crime fiction debut from British TV personality Richard Osman. Then we grow old with a couple of friends in the award-winning dark comedy from Charlotte Wood. There are more than a few people who act like getting old is the worst thing in the world. In my opinion, the more birthdays you have, the better it is for you. But if you're one of those who isn't looking forward to your golden years, the inhabitants of the retirement village at the heart of the Thursday Murder Club may change your mind. The new murder mystery is the debut from British TV presenter Richard Osman. So it's the Scooby-Doo meddling kids all kind of grown up. How did this novel about four senior amateur sleuths, I like that you like that, working to solve a murder at their retirement community come about?
You're the first person to draw a Scooby-Doo parallel, Lisa, so thank you for that. Funny enough, it came from real life. I went to visit the mother of a friend of mine who lives in a retirement community right in the heart of England. It's a really beautiful place. And when I went there, it's really beautiful. God, it's quite quiet right out in the English countryside. And you'd have read enough crime books to know that the second any writer looks at a place like that, they just think, wow, this would be an amazing place for a murder. And, you know, that's what I thought when I was there. And the people who live there, they're all over 70. And so we went for lunch and chatting to a few people. And you start hearing their life stories. And you start sort of seeing how much they're drinking and seeing the little glint in their eye. And I suddenly thought, if there was a murder here, I bet you lot would solve it. And that's how it came together, really. I suddenly thought of this thing of there's a murder in this community, and four of these people in their 70s, they meet up once a week anyway to look out over old unsolved police cases and stuff like that. And they call themselves the Thursday Murder Club. And when there's a real murder in the community, the four of them then set about trying to solve it for real. So it came from real life, really.
And what's part of the appeal of having, you know, your detectives be elderly? I know there's this tendency to wave off older people and maybe not take them so seriously and let them get away with things. That really would work to your advantage in this case.
I mean, that's absolutely hit the nail on the head. That's exactly why it worked. I mean, because, you know, people keep saying, how did you get inside the head of someone in their mid-70s? And you think, well, it's easy because their head is exactly the same as someone in their mid-50s or their mid-30s. You know, our brains don't change at all. It's just the way the world looks at us changes. So you're quite right. Having these four people, because really it should be impossible for them to get into the heart of a police investigation because you're not really allowed to do that. But the fact that they're older and the fact that they're overlooked and they're underestimated and the fact that even the police think they're harmless means that they're able to use the skills that they generated over many, many years to get their way the whole time. And, you know, by the end, they've got everybody eaten out of their hand. And it's not, I don't mean that in a cozy way and, oh, aren't they cute? Because they're pretty mischievous. You know, and they do stuff they shouldn't do, and they definitely do stuff you should be arrested for. But at every step of the way, they're sort of always one step ahead of people because, you know, we know this from real life, right? People in their mid-70s are thinking, oh, what's the worst that can happen? But I wouldn't want to meet the real Thursday Murder Club down a dark alley, that's for sure.
Especially Elizabeth. She is spunky with a lot of secrets.
I liked the idea that this was that we can still have new beginnings when we're in our 70s, that we can still make new friends, that we can still have exciting new things happening. And that's what you get here, I think. So there's four of them, and they're all very, very different. So Elizabeth, as you say, used to be, we're never really certain what she did, but it's clear that she was very high up in MI6 or MI5 or something like that, and she still has all those contacts. Joyce, who narrates a lot of the book, used to be a nurse. And therefore, actually, she's the one who gets things done because, you know, she's just used to getting stuff done. Then there's Ibrahim, who's a psychiatrist, and Ron, who was a labor activist. Now, all four of them have such completely different backgrounds and probably in previous lives would not have come across each other. But now when you put them together in this one place, in this one precinct, and give them a common goal, the friendship that is formed is so strong. And I love the idea that, you know, we still have best friends that we haven't met yet, and you're capable of being in your 70s and forming these incredible bonds.
And it also, I think, you know, for those people out there, mostly younger people who think that, you know, life ends when you turn 70 or you move into one of these retirement communities, yeah, it's totally not the case.
Yeah, I mean, honestly, when I went to see this place, the thing it reminded me of more than anything was like a college halls of residence. You know, it's like when suddenly you got kind of 200 teenagers living together. But, you know, this lot are all living together and they don't have any work to do. You know, they've got no homework. They've got no pressures. They got, you know, they have a lot of time on their hands. And it's exactly that. And when I went to the real place, what struck me more than anything was just this incredible life. You know, everyone gets up early. Everyone has lunch early. Everyone starts drinking quite early, you know, all of them. And there's such politics and mystery and intrigue, you know, like in any community. And it was so full of life. And I wanted to get that across in a book. And I think, and I hope, certainly from the response over in the UK so far, people are responding to it. And people also are saying, oh, my God, I'd love to live somewhere like that when I'm older.
You can count me in that group, too, because it sounds like an incredible place to live. You know, being a murder...
They've got a nice restaurant, they've got a swimming pool, they've got everything.
An upscale dining establishment, right?
Yeah, that's exactly right.
So being a murder mystery, this book obviously features a dose of death, but you also approach it from the angle of these seniors and how death is always a presence that's hanging over them. They never know when death is going to come knocking on their door, not necessarily because of murder, but just because of their age.
Yeah, which I think is really interesting. I talked to my mum quite a lot about it. She's in her mid-70s. And the lovely thing about it is, again, you know, I start from the position that their brains are exactly the same. You know, one's brain doesn't change. But, you know, you are around grief a lot and you're around loss an awful lot. And it does sort of change your attitude towards death a bit because you have to slightly take it more in your stride. And you accept your own mortality slightly more. And you accept, there's a number of things you accept that make you better, I think, at dealing with murders. Because from any of the four of them, there's no sentimentality really about the murders. There's no sentimentality about loss. You know, they're able to cope with it in a very kind of, it's very normalized in their life in a way that I think someone in their 50s gets much more anxious and upset and nervous and worried about these things. And these four feel to me like they have the wisdom of ages a little bit, and they have the wisdom of, you know, they have loved, they have lost, they have loved again, they have lost again. You know, so they sort of see the cycle of life a little bit. And what a lovely thing to be able to explore when there's also this sort of lovely murder mystery going on underneath it. That's the beauty of crime fiction, is we know that the journey of the book will take care of itself. We know at the end, you know, we're going to find a conclusion. We'll find out who did it. And on the way, you can explore anything you want. And when you've got characters like these four, one of the main things they do explore is death and grief and all of that kind of stuff, but in a way that hopefully is not mawkish or sentimental.
Did I also read somewhere that this wasn't the novel you originally intended to write?
Well, I would only say that in that, you know, because I spent my whole career in the UK in television, really, I started out as a writer and I've been a TV producer and presenter. So over the years, I've started various novels. And funny enough, the character Elizabeth, who's the spy at the heart of this, she came from a previous little thought. But none of those, I never had the time. You know, my career was always, there was always something else to do. And it's only the last couple of years that I thought, no, okay, I'm ready to do this. And then I went to that retirement community. I thought, wow, that's my idea. And then I thought, oh, I've got that character. my goodness, she'd be amazing at the heart of this. So like anybody who writes, I think probably over the years when you're trying to pluck up the courage or find the time, you have various ideas and then you can kind of use them for parts. You kind of go, oh, what about that bit of that and that bit of this? But this is the first time I actually sat down and said, no, you're doing this from start to finish. I did it completely in secret. I said, no, I'm just going to sit down. I'm going to get a book written. I'm going to get it finished. We'll see if it's any good. But yeah, Elizabeth was taken from the previous idea I had, which I might at some point recycle, like all writers, right?
I think there are a lot of people who are happy that you finally sat down to write the book because it really is very enjoyable, and there's some laugh out loud funny parts in there, so that's it's worth it too. So
well, that's quite apart from talking again of that thing of look, the journey of a crime book sort of takes care of itself in that where you're headed. You know, one of the things I wanted to be was I believe in kindness and warmth and happiness and friendship and all of those things which are quite unfashionable these days when we're set against each other all the time. And, you know, social media will tell us we're at each other's throats the whole time and we're very combative. And that's not how I experience life. It's just, you know, it just isn't. I think that's an illusion created by social media. And I wanted this book. Look, there's plenty of arguments and there's murders. There's all sorts of stuff going on. But there's a kindness at its core and there's friendship at its core and there's goodness at its core. And that was incredibly important to me. And I think that's something, again, that people have really responded to over here. In the year that we've had, incredibly tough on both sides of the Atlantic, I think people are, and again, I wrote this before any of this happened, but I think we are looking for that sense of community and we're looking to see the best in each other because, you know, it is there. And we're looking for a sense of certainty as well. And, you know, I think crime fiction gives us that. And I think this book hopefully gives us a bit of warmth and humanity as well.
And my last question for you is, will this foursome make a return in another book?
Everybody who survives the first book, everyone who's still alive on the Liberty returns for the second book, which I know, right? I have to say that just for spoilers. So I've been writing that during lockdown. It's been great. I've been writing the second one. And I've just signed up to do two more as well in the UK and in the US as well, which is really, really exciting. So, we've got at least four more years of the Thursday Murder Club to come, which I couldn't be more excited about.
Oh, I look forward to reading them. They're really a lot of fun. And I mean, the bodies just keep piling up around them. So.
They certainly do. Thank you so much.
Richard Osman, the Thursday Murder Club. Thank you for spending some time with us.
Pleasure.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Around Hollywood, it's no secret that as women get older, the number of roles available to them diminish. Women's fiction can sometimes be the same way, with women in their late 60s and 70s relegated to being sweet and doting grandmothers. That's why it was very refreshing to read The Weekend, the latest book from award-winning Australian author Charlotte Wood. In her story of old friends, the older women are real people with real problems. You know what? Just like in real life. She tells us more.
Thank you for the observation, Lisa. The Weekend is about three women friends they're aged in their 70s. They've been friends for around 40 years. They are women who have been really quite powerful in their younger lives and actually still see themselves as very powerful. And one of their kind of problems is that it's only just dawning on them that other people don't see them as powerful anymore. So they come together on a summer morning in Australia to clean out the beach house of their very beloved fourth friend, Sylvie, who has died. And they're cleaning out her house for sale. And they are each sort of coming to this gathering with, various sort of private anxieties and challenges and sort of griefs. They're all in grief for Sylvie, but they're finding themselves kind of lost to one another now that she's gone, because she was they're discovering sort of after the fact that she was the glue that sort of held this group together for so long. And they're sort of struggling around the gap that she has left with her death. But they are, you know, they're active. Two of them are still working or trying to work. One of them, Adele, is an actress. Wendy is a sort of public intellectual who still has great work to write. And they, you know, they feel as intellectually viable, as relevant as they always have, but they're kind of a little slow to catch on that the culture is kind of turning away from them now at this age.
You know, for so long, I think people have always just brushed aside older people. And it's really just, you know, people now are just starting to realize, maybe because there are more older people out there, that life doesn't end when you turn 60, 70, 80, whatever it may be. Mm. Are people, do you think, more open to reading a story like this now? Is this a book you would have been able to write, say, you know, 15 years ago?
I don't know about that. I think certainly people are open to reading this. I mean, it's done incredibly well here in Australia and in Britain and in Germany, and it's just come out in the States. So I feel like the responses that I've had from older women who've read it are saying, "Oh, here I am. You know, here is a book about people like me." In fact, I had an email from an American reader the other day who was 82, and she said, "Thank you for writing a book about old women." She didn't even say older, you know, she wasn't uptight about the word old. She said, "Writing a book about old women that isn't about waiting for death or waiting on grandchildren." And I mean, I guess that's one of the things about the women in my book too. They're not defined by their family relationships. One of them has adult children, but she sort of has always been kind of rather too busy with her work to really pay enough attention to them. And that's one of the sort of creeping realizations that comes to her. But the others are childless, and they're defined by work as much as family.
And it's interesting too that this friendship that the four of them, now three of them, share, it has lasted a lot longer than some of their marriages, some of their careers.
Mm.
You know, it's a testament, I think, like, because you can choose your friends, maybe not your family.
Yes, although at this point they sort of feel like family, and they are presented with some of their kind of, you know, their polite edges have been sort of worn off by the age of their friendship. So I guess one of the issues for them is that they've almost forgotten how to love each other as kindly, perhaps, as they once did. But yeah, the friendship has outlasted at least two of their marriages. One of the husbands has died. Another one was divorced, you know, long, long ago in the past. But they've been through a lot together. They've been through illness, through grief and death. And you know, I think that's... there are a lot of older women outliving men in our societies now, and they, you know, turn to each other for sustenance and for company and friendship and this sort of sisterly relationship that, you know, is as complicated as sisters' relationships are.
One of the characters I'd be remiss not to mention, but who I think plays an outsized role, is Finn, who happens to be one of the women's older, you know, on the way out dogs.
Mm.
Why, what was your point in writing his character in? Is he a mirror or is he a crystal ball?
Well, I think he's both of those things for them. Finn is a very old dog, as you say, an 18-year-old sort of mutt, designer mutt now, but when he was presented to Wendy by Sylvie, their now dead friend, when he was a puppy, he was just a sort of, you know, what would be called a mongrel dog. But Wendy just loves him sort of helplessly, even though he is now so old that he is really falling apart. And he's, you know, a bit, he's certainly dementing. He's limping. He's a bit deaf, a bit blind. He's a little bit incontinent, which does not go down well with one of the more controlling or sort of controlled members of the threesome, Jude, who's a very organized person and is just horrified that Wendy dragged this bloody dog along. But Finn represents for people, well, everyone sort of projects their fears about getting old onto this dog, even sort of passers-by. And he is a bit of a crystal ball. He's certainly a mirror for their own feelings about sort of dependence and vulnerability. Jude, for example, thinks that he should just be put down. And, you know, she insists that it's cruel for Wendy to keep him alive. But Wendy thinks, well, he's not in pain. He's just old. And this is what happens when a dog gets very old. And she isn't repelled by him and his body kind of falling apart, whereas Jude is just can't bear the sight of this ailing, failing creature. But sort of despite herself, she starts to look really at what Finn is representing for her. And each of the women has a kind of revelation about themselves that is presented to them through Finn. It's not just about getting old, but it's about maybe things that they have been avoiding thinking about themselves.
You know, I want to take the time now to point out that while there is this very serious undertone about, you know, longstanding friendships and death and grief, you do manage to find the humor in getting old. And there are some very funny observations and interactions that happen among this threesome as they're spending this weekend cleaning out their friend's house.
Yeah, I wanted to write a funny book. You know, my previous book was called The Natural Way of Things, and it was a really kind of tough, pretty grueling book about misogyny, and it was a tough book to write, and I know a tough book for people to read, some people, even though, you know, it got a lot of love as well. But so it was a kind of reaction for me to write something that, even though it could be about, you know, some sad and hard things, I wanted there to be lightness and humour through it. And interestingly, this morning I interviewed Sigrid Nunez about her new book, What Are You Going Through? And we talked about, you know, humour and what it does in a book, which is what it does in life. It's part of life. It's part of all the sad things in life have, you know, they have an angle or a flip side that is funny, even in the most dire of circumstances and in the hardest times. Is a kind of absurdity, and if you don't laugh, you cry kind of situation. And, you know, and we're all going through that kind of thing right now with the pandemic and everything. But it's a survival mechanism for human beings to find ways to laugh. And so I wanted to bring a lot of laughter into the book. And I could play with, you know, things about friendship and women's sort of scratchiness with each other after they've known each other for a long time, and just stuff about bodies and dogs and friends and houses. And, you know, it was a kind of real delight for me to have some fun writing a lot of humour into the book.
I think I'm smiling to myself as you're talking about bodies and things like that, because all I keep thinking about is Adele. And her obsession with her own body. She's the actress, and how great of a body she has for her age.
Yeah, Adele has always been a very fine stage actress, always been very physically fit and well, and, you know, a bit of a bombshell in her youth. And she's particularly proud of her great breasts. And, you know, she was one of those actresses who was known, you know, for her boobs. And she's still kind of, you know, she thinks, well, I've still got it, you know. And the others, you know, I think the humour and the pathos, I hope, comes from the ways that each woman thinks about herself, and then that is interrupted by the other woman's thoughts about her. So Adele's going down to the beach in her swimming costume thinking, I'm looking pretty good. And the others are thinking, oh, my God, she's still getting away. You know, she thinks she can get away with that kind of outfit. It's sort of really, she's just too much. But, you know, but that's also reflective of their own issues about their own bodies and not being, and they're sort of competitively making sure that she doesn't see them kind of wincing as they get up out of the chair because they've got a bit of a bad back, whereas she sort of springs up like a gazelle. I love Adele. I think, I mean, she's sort of a little bit vain, but she's full of this sort of joy in life that sometimes irritates other people, but I really like her.
It's both refreshing and also a little scary to know that, you know, we really don't change all that much as we get older. Our bodies are going to change and maybe slow down a little bit and creak in places it never did. But at the core, that's always going to be the same.
Well, it's, I think one of the things I discovered through writing the book that it was about how we don't seem to know ourselves any better as we get older. You know, I used to think that, inevitably, as I got older, I would begin to know myself more and be more aware and all of that. And, you know, I don't think that anymore. I wish that were the case, but I think a lot of this book is about how we can still have illusions about ourselves, sometimes in really serious ways, in lots of little ways that don't really matter, but also in some quite big ways that cause pain to other people or are not letting us really face some stuff that we need to face. You know, by the time we're 75, there are things that you need to know about yourself. And sometimes your friends are the ones who present you with this sort of shock that you're not the kind of person you think you are. And that can be kind of devastating.
Is that one of the things you want readers to take away?
Yeah, I mean, I never know what to... I just want readers to enjoy it, for a start, to enjoy being with people they might recognize. Even, you know, lots of young women and young men, funnily enough, have said, I really identify with these women. This 22-year-old bookseller, beautiful young man, saying, oh, I just felt so identified with him. And I really, you know, that's what every writer wants, really. But I guess... You know, I think for me, apart from the subject of aging, which is kind of the thing that people talk about a lot, but for me, the friendship is the real heart of the book. And how do you keep a friendship for decades meaningfully alive? How do you allow each other to change enough that you can each be yourself as you change as you get older, and yet still have the strength of friendship that we all would want, I think, into our old age.
Well, we've been talking with Charlotte Wood. The book is The Weekend. Thank you for spending some time with us and talking about it.
Thanks so much, Lisa. Thank you.
And that's where we close the book on this chapter. Next time, we chat with Tana French about her Western-inspired murder mystery set in Ireland. Until then, follow us on Twitter and Instagram at WCBS 880 Books. I'm Lisa Cherkovich.